Thanks for coming back to another episode of Pitch It, a fintech conversation amongst founders, investors, and friends. I'm your host, Todd Anderson, Chief Content Officer at Fintech Nexus. And what we do is we take a peek behind the curtain. What motivates someone to start a company? How do investors make the right bet? What do accelerators do during and help enabling the process of growing your company? How do banks think of founders? Not to mention, we try to have some fun, and what you'll see is we'll also do some special episodes. We have some new features coming. So stick with us, and you'll get all you'll need to know about the fintech startup landscape. Pitch It is really a part of a larger podcast network here at Fintech Nexus. You can go to my colleague Peter, our co-founder and chairman, for Fintech One-on-One. You can subscribe to his feed. Or we have our newest podcast by one of our writers, Isabel Castro, the Fintech Coffee Break. For everything produced by Fintech Nexus, you can check out Fintech Nexus Podcast, which is really our content fire hose. All shows, webinar replays, even in-person event content, not to mention our weekly news show. As always, we hope that you rate the show and write a review. I try to really take listener feedback seriously, and as it helps make the show better. You can also follow the podcast and all of our podcasts on the feed of your choice, whether it be Apple, Spotify, wherever you like to listen, or come directly to news.fintechnexus.com. Now, let's get on with the show. On today's episode, I'm joined by Rajul Zipardi, co-founder and CEO of Zip. Rajul and I talk about the frustrations that he and his co-founder kept encountering when working at Airbnb and other places, which ultimately led to the idea behind Zip and procurement and how to improve that approvals process for employees as well as for the company and management. The importance of creating a consumer-grade solution, the growth trajectory Zip is currently on, raising capital, Roger Federer, and much, much more. A couple of short PSAs before we get to the episode. We are still accepting applications for Pitch It at Fintech Nexus USA 2023. Just head to fintechnexus.com for details. If you look in the show notes, there is the specific link to follow. If you want to sponsor an episode, come on as a guest, or sponsor one of our many digital or in-person event offerings, just reach out to me anytime, Todd, T-O-D-D, at fintechnexus.com. We have our annual USA event coming up May 10th and 11th in New York City. Still plenty of time to buy tickets, to sponsor, or to speak. Now, without further ado, Rajul Zipardi, co-founder and CEO at Zip. Enjoy the episode. Welcome to the podcast, Rajul. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Todd.
Of course. So, I like to start the episode just with a little bit of background. So if you can tell the audience a little bit about yourself, kind of what's your journey been thus far?
Yeah. So I'm co-founder and CEO here at Zip. Zip is the world's first intake to procure solution. So we sort of provide one front door for any employee in an organization to request a purchase, and then we route it for approval across legal and IT and finance and risk and all the different teams that need to approve before connecting into the ERP or financial system in the back. This is my second company. So before this was the co-founder and CEO of a company called Flight Car, totally unrelated. We would give you free or parking by renting out your car to someone else. I dropped out of college to start that one, and then worked at Airbnb in the middle for a couple of years on the product side. So I've worked at tech companies my whole career.
It sounds like you mentioned your previous company. Obviously, you have Zip as well. It sounds like being an entrepreneur is kind of in the blood. What brought you to that point of starting your own company? Is it something that you've kind of always had on the roadmap? Is it family members have also started their own businesses, and it's kind of been ingrained from you from the start? Where'd the bug come from?
Yeah, it's a tough question to answer because it's not so, I don't really know. I feel like it was, I always sort of wanted more, maybe the right word is like meaning behind sort of what I was, whatever I'm doing in my life and career. And there's nothing that gives you more sort of like just such a deep connection, and like sort of like there's nothing else that you could possibly do, I think, that like marries your like personal identity to the whatever it is that you're working on, unless it's like kind of like something that you start. And so I think it was a combination of all of that, and what we're working on today was certainly a pain point that I experienced in the past too, which always helps give more meaning to something.
So where did before we get into exactly what Zip does and what you guys are looking to solve, where did the genesis of the idea come from? And ultimately, why'd you kind of go with the name Zip?
Yeah, great questions. It really, like with I think most folks that start their own ventures and companies, it was a problem that my co-founder Lou and I, that we had both experienced in the past. This issue of I think for us it happened with a renewal that we were jointly trying to manage, a software renewal, and realizing that, wait a minute, there's no central place for either of us to kick off a request. And then to see where it sits between all the different teams, right? Finance and legal and IT and security that need to approve it. Because actually, I remember I would go to the legal team and say, "Hey, we've got this contract," and then I would get asked, "Well, did security look at it?" And of course, I don't even know anyone in security because it's not my job to. Right? It's a
It's
big
kind of
team.
like a mirage of all these different people you have to go and talk to.
Exactly. And all these things are, these teams are actually relatively new. If you think about the last 20 years, right? 20 years ago, data security was nowhere near, as core to a company trying to manage its risk profile, as it is today. And so it was more about how much it costs 20 years ago. And today it's about how much it costs, but also about the risk that it entails. And so that has driven more complexity and more teams into these approvals and into this process, and that's how Lou and I came across the problem, and then the name, to answer that question, well, as with anyone, coming up with a name for their own, company, you're of course biased to what's available on the internet and what doesn't cost an arm and a leg. So, I would be lying if I didn't say that was at least half of the equation. And then the other half was we wanted something that could be a verb and that was short. We see across customers today that finance and procurement will ask, "Hey, did you zip it? Did you zip that thing?" Or, "Oh yeah, I zipped this," or, "I zipped that," or, like we see it being used as a verb, which is awesome. And that was the intent. We wanted something that was short that could be a verb.
So tell us a little bit more about exactly what you guys do, how you do it, and ultimately, is there kind of an ideal size company that kind of fits the solution best? Is it scalable with any company? Give us a little more context and detail around exactly what you guys do and how you do it.
Yeah, so Zip solves for what we call intake to procure, which is upstream of the procure to pay process. And so we provide the one front door. So any employee that has a purchase request, they go to Zip, they answer some series of, conditional questions. We've got best practice templates. The user hits submit, and they see sort of a visual representation of the approvals that that request needs to go through between, budget, legal, IT, security, all the teams that we discussed. And then when all the approvals are all said and done, we connect into the financial system to push a purchase order, or purchase rec, or some other artifact into the system of record on the back. So that's what Zip does. And In terms of the size of the company, I think there is such a thing as too small. Like if you're a 10 or 20 person company, you probably don't have an in-house lawyer unless you're doing something very specific. Like there's a lot of these teams don't exist, right? So we don't sell very small. It's not a problem you experience yet. But above 100, 200, employees, sort of in that general benchmark, for sure, this is a problem that companies start to have. And it's also a very horizontal problem because it's across literally every industry, right? Whether you make physical products and sell them, whether you make software, whether you're a consulting firm, whether, you're retail, like whatever it is, you have to have these approvals, you have to have these teams. And procurement and buying is becoming more and more distributed today than ever before. And so I would say there's no floor and then there's no ceiling. We have Fortune 100 customers, very, very large organizations with tens of thousands of employees. If anything, the problem gets worse. We see there's no ceiling on it, right? Because you can imagine a large company that's been around over 100 years, I'm thinking of a customer of ours, they just grew over the last 100 years through a lot of acquisitions. And every time you buy a company, well, you've got another ERP or financial system in the back end. You've got more teams, more systems. And, you add, you look at that over decades and it's like a jungle in the back, but you don't want to confuse the end user because you won't get adherence. You won't get spend under management. You won't get control of your spend if people don't follow the process. And so Zip sort of becomes that front layer of great, everything starts here. And then we can sort of guide people to where they need to get to, even if, downstream things have to end up inevitably in a different system.
When doing research on the your company and for the episode, there's a term that you constantly use on the website and when talking about it, which is consumer grade. Why was that important to you guys to make that a point when talking about the product, when putting it up on the website? Clearly it's a key aspect of what you guys are looking to provide.
Yeah, that's actually a really important topic for me. So my whole life really, other than Zip, I've worked at B2C companies, companies that sell to the average consumer, not to other businesses. And what you realize in a B2C setting is that you have to earn the right to the business every second of every minute of every day, right? For example, someone comes to Airbnb.com, for example, and say the website doesn't load or say it's slow or something like that, they'll simply leave and go somewhere else, just like they would for any other product or service that they're trying to buy from on the internet, right? You always have to deliver and have to keep a really high bar. And you're always trying to make the website and the UI more and more intuitive because, with a large number of, consumers visiting your website or maybe it's your store or whatever it is, you always want to optimize conversion. The problem, though, is that when you look at enterprise software and companies, software that lives inside of businesses, usually you don't have to earn the right to the business every second of every minute of every day. You have to earn the right to the business, once every couple of years when it comes up for renewal. And so what happens is that a lot of these B2B and enterprise software companies, certainly in financial software too, end up not focusing as much on the end user because they're selling to maybe a CFO or they're selling to someone, they'll focus for them. But then the average person that's trying to buy their thing or that's trying to just do something and then go back to doing their jobs is forgotten about. And it leads to a poor user experience. It leads to adoption issues. It leads to, all of these sort of downstream pains that from which, Zip was born, right? And that we solve for it. So we really only, our engineering product and design team is only based in, we only hire in San Francisco with a few exceptions. And the team largely comes from consumer engineering backgrounds from companies like Airbnb, but like, Meta and Google and and just, you know, so many other companies, and it just really focuses on, you know, the end user experience, building with the consumer mindset, because, you know, you go to Uber Eats, you expect a certain level of experience. Just because you're using a software that your company gives you, you shouldn't have to expect something that looks like it's 25 years older.
Has there been any, I guess, interesting byproducts or interesting things that you found out when talking with clients that when using what you guys implement, you know, they've seen, you know, extra cash on the balance sheet, they haven't seen as many double payments, or, you know, has there been any, you know, benefits that maybe surprised you after implementing this with a variety of enterprises that you'd be like, huh, that's interesting. Maybe that wasn't something that we thought going into it.
Yeah, I mean, we actually track some core metrics internally, and we help our customers track them, right? So first of all, like, a lot of them didn't have that much visibility into things like cycle times, but also just into their spend under management and how much they're logging and savings, whether they have a procurement team or they don't yet have a procurement team, but how much are we actually negotiating as a business, right? And what's the level of saving that we're driving? As Zip across our customer base, our customers have saved over $900 million. And those are sort of trackable and, you know, sort of on a request by request basis, right? If you sort of sum everything up. So it's not like it's not a top-down number. It's actually bottom-up sort of number across the customer base. So it's very, very material. And, you know, what we see is adherence to the process. PO, one of the common metrics sort of in the finance world is PO back spend. And that metric for customers that are on Zip, we see, you know, well north of 90%, which is very best in class. And all that means is that, you know, finance, IT, all these different teams, procurement actually know about the spend that's happening before it actually occurs. Because the worst thing that you want is you get an invoice and you're like, oh, what the hell is this? And it turns out someone bought something, but it didn't actually go through the process. And of course that's a cost issue, but also a risk issue, because, you know, what if it should have been reviewed by security? Well, if they sent you an invoice, they probably already gave you the services or the software or whatever it is. And it's kind of too late. Yeah. I've gone through that review, right? And there's no single auditable record for the risk. And, you know, there has not been, and that's one of the things that Zip provides.
Does, you know, you mentioned no training as well. You know, I mean, if I'm a company and, you know, we have all these internal processes, we're growing, it's kind of a mess at times. Clearly implementing Zip would streamline and get us more organized, but does the company need to change anything they operate? I mean, you do mention no training a fair amount when doing research for this. So tell us a little bit more about the simplicity in some ways of implementing this, how that interacts with the way a company already is operating.
Yeah, no, great questions. So, you know, when we work with a new customer, it takes us on average about 2 months from start to completely live on Zip. So for this type of software, that's actually quite fast compared to sort of what the benchmarks are. And as part of that process, they'll have someone on the Zip side that is an ex-procurement professional that maybe, you know, for example, worked in procurement at a company like Apple, or an ex, implementer of ERP and procure to pay type software, like complex implementations at companies like Deloitte or KPMG. So it'll be you know, someone from one of those cut from one of those two cloths that'll help implement, and they'll, you know, we really ask and understand, like, you know, every company is a little bit different, right? You might have a different team, you might not have a certain type of team. One team might be much larger than another, whatever the case is. But by and large, most companies actually are pretty similar in how they buy things, as long as they're of roughly the same size. And so we have best practice and standardized templates now to get people going more quickly for things like buying software or hiring a contractor or, you know, purchasing consulting services or marketing spend or, you know, a lot of use cases like that, so we can get people up and running much more quickly so they can actually lean on the best practice. Or if they want to configure or change something, great, they can totally do it. And you know, Zip as a whole is no code config, which is a big deal, because normally, you know, you need to staff with a lot of sort of engineers and IT folks to actually help you change anything, which can over time become cumbersome. So that's you know, kind of how the implementation process goes, fairly quick and rely on best practice standards that we provide. And then from a training perspective, you're absolutely right. For the end user, there's no training required. All that our customers do, and we have templates for this, but they'll, you know, essentially send out an announcement to the business or to line of business, depending on their size, and say, hey, any purchase requests that you have, go here, go to your single sign-on, and then you'll see a tile for a Zip with a Z. Just click on that. You'll figure it out. Like, that's it. There's nothing else you need to know. You can just follow the process. It's self-evident.
Do they have to change any other like systems within the company? I mean, you know, how much connection does it have to maybe the existing accounting and other softwares that a company might use, especially a complex company? And you mentioned when you were describing it early on, kind of it ends up pushing the payment out. What other integrations does a company need to think about when they're thinking about maybe going to Zip?
Oh, that's a great question. So we integrate to a series of different systems. And so it depends on the landscape that, you know, that the customer, right, has inside of their organization. So the most critical integration is nearly always the ERP integration. So the financial system, we support all the major ERPs, and we have pre-built connectors to all of them. So we can actually, as part of implementation, we will actually help you connect to the ERP, and we'll help you map all of the custom fields into or out of ERP. All of that Zip does as part of implementation and part of that 8-week sort of time frame. So we handle all of that with the ERP, and then we also connect to other systems sort of along the journey. So if your IT team, you know, uses ServiceNow or Jira or something else, or your legal team uses a contract lifecycle management system like an Ironclad, or you know, your risk team uses a GRC, governance and risk and compliance solution. We connect to the leading providers in each of those buckets, and we'll connect to those systems as part of implementation. But I don't use the word integrate. I use the word connect, because usually integration implies some level of custom engineering work that needs to, you know, occur to like map fields and all this stuff. Zip doesn't require that. It's all productized. So everything can be done in the product by someone that does not understand code, like me. You can just go in, you can connect the systems, because all the work has been done on the back end on our side so that it's all repeatable. So there's no custom work we need to do.
Has there been in some ways in the bigger or the larger companies, a fear that maybe this could replace a certain employee, or is it more thought of as a streamlined, you know, kind of more transparent tool versus, you know, maybe a replacement for a department?
No, that's a great question. So, you know, maybe a third-ish or so of companies that we see, you know, below 1,000 people, like, don't even have a procurement person or team yet, right? Because they're somewhat smaller. They just don't have a team. Certainly above 1,000, like nearly every company will have a procurement function and a procurement team and a procurement leader. And, you know, someone actually gave me this analogy. It's like, they were like, you know, if you have procurement, if you hire for great procurement people, great finance people, maybe in an organization without procurement, right? And then you put them in charge of managing the purchasing process, and they're manually, because without Zip, they're manually coordinating the stuff. Like, hey, did security look at this? Okay, where's it?
It's probably a lot of spreadsheets that they have all these columns that like check security looked at this.
Exactly. And, you know, of course, there's a lot of audit and compliance issues with using a spreadsheet, but correct. And, you know, but the analogy that was used is, it's like if you hire surgeons, but they spend 80% of the day actually mopping the floors, and then 20% of the day doing surgeon work, right? Like, and there's a similar analogy here, because if you take the tactical stuff out, the, hey, follow up on this or follow up on that, you take that stuff out, someone that is managing procurement whether they have a procurement title or not, can actually focus on the strategic work, can source and negotiate, find the right vendor, be a partner to the business instead of just constantly following up with, being relegated to following up with people, right? And so it actually elevates the role, is what we found across the customer base.
Has it also in some ways elevated the employee that now feels empowered that, hey, I can do it this way, versus maybe if they're nervous to talk to a certain department, or maybe they might not know how to ask for something, but if they do it through a tool like Zip, it maybe gives them a bit more of authority, or a bit more confidence, like, hey, I can just put it through this tool, I don't have to worry about doing this song and dance with someone. There's kind of a more of a process to it.
I think so to some degree. I think really though, what it helps with is I agree with confidence, because clarity around the process generally should give people, and does, I think, give people more confidence. But it prevents, the most frustrating thing for someone that's responsible for procurement in an organization is, hey, I've got this contract, I really need this thing. I already told them we're gonna like buy their product because it's awesome. Here's the contract. I know I can't just sign this, so can you help me get this thing signed? And then the person's like, oh no, like what if this is not even the right vendor? And one, two, how am I supposed to negotiate with them if this person told them we're gonna buy it? Yeah. Right? And three, now I can't be strategic and I'm not valued in the organization because I'm just viewed as a paper pusher. I gotta get this thing signed one way or another. And that's the challenge. But if you make it easy to just let someone know, like to raise your hand, just follow the process, because it's so, like, you can't, like, normally there's an excuse, like, oh yeah, it was really confusing. That's, what could I do? Here's the contract, yeah. Right? But if you make it so easy that you can't leverage that as an excuse, you drive more adherence, you get more involved earlier, you can negotiate more things, you get more visibility, you're more compliant, right? That's the thing that Zip helps with. One clarification to make though is that we're not making it easier for people to spend money, just to be clear. Just like in sales, right? You want to get to a yes or a no faster and more quickly. Yeah. It's just, you don't want people spinning their wheels, wasting time. And especially imagine someone that goes through this, they give the contract, and then the CFO says, no, we're not doing this. That person's going to be more emotionally unhappy with the company and their employer than if they were just told earlier, without wasting all of this time. And so it's I just want to make that one distinction, but it's about getting to the answer faster.
I saw it was either in one of your releases or in one of the interviews you might have given, but you had mentioned the relationship to remote work and the procurement process and ultimately how complicated it's now become, given that more people are working from home and there's not just people in an office and you can go talk to someone and so on. Do you think Zip would be where you guys are on your growth path without remote work? Do you think adoption would be maybe take a little bit longer? I mean, how is remote work played into kind of where you guys are today?
Oh, it's a great question. My view on this is that the problem we solve for, it's a problem regardless of whether you're in person or remote. And we have plenty of customers that are, just given the nature of their businesses, they're pretty much all in office, and then we have customers that are like completely remote, right? But maybe even were remote before the pandemic. So all across the spectrum, but as a whole and as a macro trend, I think remote work actually really exacerbates this problem, because, if you're in office and the legal team sits here, the finance folks sit over there, you can kind of just go like mosey over and just, hey, how do I get this thing done? Or, okay, I'll go talk to, Sally in legal. People will guide you. But when you don't have the relationship, because you've never really met them, and it's all over, Slack or Teams or just email. I mean, that's tough. How do you figure out who to go to? And, you can still do it and you can figure it out if you spend the calories, but it's just harder. There's just more friction to get to the right people.
What's the biggest lesson or one lesson that you've learned about Zip since you guys launched?
It's almost like one of those, you know, where do you start? Because
or one that you want to share that maybe kind of sticks in your mind a little bit.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think, I think one thing that my co-founder, Lou, and I really value is, you know, we want people, when we talk about this, you know, about our culture internally, right? Like, we want Zip to be the place where people at Zip, we call everyone here a Zipster, where they do their best work, right? So, and the bar is, hey, 10 years from now, you're walking down the street and someone says, hey, Todd, where'd you do your best work? Hopefully, without thinking, you just say Zip, right? Like that. And that's obviously a very, understandably, a very hard thing to measure. But that's the thing that we strive for. And I think one thing I've learned as the company has grown a lot over the last, you know, three-ish years, is it's important to really not just hire the best people, but empower them and trust them and be as transparent as you can be with the organization about, you know, what's going well, where the opportunities are, to get allow people to like apply, you know, their skills and their knowledge and experience to the most challenging problems that the business experiences. That's a lot harder said, a lot easier said, sorry, than done. And I think I've sort of learned a lot about that in the last 3 years since we started the company.
Now, on the opposite side of the spectrum, what about a regret? Something that you regret since launching the company?
Oh, that's a tough one. You know, I think it's tough to regret this, I guess, in some ways. But we always, you know, we've always, like, I think a lot of companies, let me put it this way, their marketing website, their marketing assets, actually look better than the product itself. You know, like, I think they're like very polished, but then when you look at it, you're like, oh, that's what it looks like. It kind of looks like it's 15 years old. You know, and I think we grew so quickly and we have so much focus on product and engineering that actually I would say that the inverse has been true. And so I, you know, and we're working on this, right? We're, you know, making sure that our assets live up candidly to the level of the product that I think our phenomenal engineering product and design teams have put together. But that's, you know, just being candid, I think that's a regret that I have.
Best piece of advice since launching so far?
You should never, or as much as humanly possible, keep the feedback loop with your customers as tight as you possibly can. Like, it's so important to, and that means you should talk to customers all the time. It doesn't matter how big you are or how quickly you grow. And, you know, and I know this has been said before, but it's important that you as a founder do it. But it's also important that the team does it, and especially any part of the team that would normally be isolated from the customer, right? So sales, you know, obviously is going to talk to the customer all the time, and implementation and teams like that, but engineering, but design, but product. It's very, very easy to sort of think through and, you know, deduce a vision for something. But it's much harder to actually go distill what customers are saying to you, whether it's a problem or a positive thing, and filter that into the roadmap in a cohesive way. That feedback loop is something that I think we've fortunately done a good job of. I just hope we never lose that over the next decade.
You mentioned, you know, obviously you guys have been growing. How big's the team today? What does the team look like in terms of engineering, sales? Kind of what's the makeup of where you guys are today?
Yeah, so the company is about 250 people, you know, engineering, product design, the team that builds the product is roughly shy of 100, maybe somewhere in that ballpark. And then we've got between sales and post sales, you know, implementation and customer success and technical support, of course, and sort of all of the client facing teams are about 120, 30, 20-ish, I think. And then the balance will be our sort of platform and supporting teams, right? So legal and finance, and actually a lot of the teams that normally use Zip.
Do you guys use Zip?
Of course we use Zip. And I'm glad that we negotiate and we have visibility into all of our spend and can, especially given the macro climate, feel like we have a handle on our expenses.
I see that you guys have raised some outside capital. How was investment interest and the fundraising process, and what'd you learn about your company when talking to investors and pitching people and really getting into kind of the discussion around the product and what you guys were trying to build?
I think we were fortunate that we've been, we've had an awesome group of supporters and investors, as part of Zip. And I really appreciated the fact that they were customer first and they were product first in their mindset, right? There are investors that will solely dig into the numbers and solely dig into, what are the gross margins and what's the revenue growth and all this stuff. And then there's investors that really care about the actual, what you're doing and the product and why it matters in the world and why there's an opportunity and how you can actually help other businesses, in our case, do procurement and, manage spend better. And so we're fortunate to really, it's a learning process and has been for me, but to really focus and find those folks, those individuals that really have a product first mindset. And so that's been a takeaway that I've had from the fundraising experience.
What piece of advice would you offer to a fellow founder if they were to pick up the episode, whether it be fundraising related or just, kind of what you've learned over the last few years building out Zip or even from your prior company? Any tales of wisdom that you can give to other founders who might be starting their journey now?
Yeah, I mean, one thing I would say is you are where you are on your product market fit journey, regardless of whether you've raised money or not or how much you've raised. In fact, raising more money often sort of it almost becomes a delusion because you think it's a signal that wait a minute, maybe we have product market fit, but actually how much money you raise has nothing to do with whether you have product market fit. Everything to do with product market fit is whether the market wants your product or not. And until you are very confident that you have product market fit, I could not more emphatically say that you should keep your team as lean as you possibly can, because you want to keep your team lean so that you can pivot, you can change the idea, maybe by a lot, maybe by a little, whatever it is. And you capture that feedback loop I was talking about earlier. You keep it tight, because what will happen is that if you have too many people, you don't have just enough people that can report to you and your co-founder, it's maybe one more layer removed. Now, people with different incentives, they want to justify their role. It's like they're not as attached to you. They're not in it because of you. They're in it because of what the role is. And that's tough if you don't have product market fit. But it flips. When it flips like a switch. And when it flips, then it's actually almost irresponsible not to grow headcount and to sort of stay ahead of the pace that the market is consuming the product from you, right? And how do you make that occur faster? So it's like very, very different, because what makes you good pre-market fit is actually maybe something that makes you not so good post-product market fit. And it's like two different modes of operation.
We have just a couple minutes left. I'd like to end a little bit lighter as we finish up. Do you have a favorite book or the last book that you read?
Oh gosh, I don't know if I have a favorite book, but I recently read, there was a great biography, forgetting the name now, on Federer. I always watched tennis growing up. I can't remember the name, but it's got like a green cover. But it was a really, really great read, and I don't think I had appreciated his story. You only see what you see sort of on the court, right? But I actually didn't have a full understanding of the journey, and you actually realize how not inevitable it all was. Because now you look back, and obviously he's retired now, and it just seems like, yeah, well, of course. I mean, he was just such a phenomenal player, but actually, it wasn't that intuitive. And there was a lot of struggle involved. And only looking back does it feel that way. And so, a lot of lessons to be learned. But I thought that was a great book.
You know, founders need to stay fresh for them and their teams. You know, anything specific that you do to unwind and kind of step away and keep your mind fresh?
Honestly, I would be on the boat that, you know, the boat that needs the tips. But you know, I do have a rule on Saturdays that, you know, my co-founder Lou and I, we don't touch work at all. We do work on Sundays, just the two of us, and it's a time when the two of us can do our one-on-one for a couple hours, and you know, I can catch up on everything and just make sure I have a clear head and my priorities for the week, for the company, for the month, so forth. On Sundays, because Monday through Friday is otherwise a whirlwind. So I think having some time that gives you space and unstructured time to think about the business too, I think is important, because ultimately, if you have a handle on that, I think you actually, it's easier to have a handle on everything else in your life. And so Sunday's the day for that. Saturday's the day to do no work.
You mentioned tennis, obviously. Any other sports or teams that you root for when it comes to activities?
I don't watch that many sports, man. So I just I watch tennis. I was just watching Indian Wells, which ended on Sunday this past weekend, but no, not much else.
Favorite vacation spot?
We recently did a very delayed very, very delayed honeymoon. But we were in Tokyo just over the holiday break. It was cold, relatively cold, but it was just such an awesome, I think it was like the first post-COVID shutdown type New Year's in Japan and Tokyo. And so it was just awesome. And so we'll definitely go back for, you know, everything from the culture to the food to just the overall experience. So highly recommend.
And a final question, biggest inspiration, what inspires you?
I think that's a tough one. You know, I think for me and with Zip specifically, I think it's some of what we touched on. Like, I think there's just so much, there's so many products and so much software out there that people are compelled to use that doesn't provide them any delight in their day, right? That's enterprise software. Like, there's no, it's just so divergent from the consumer experience today. And you know, I think what keeps me going and what keeps a lot of us at Zip going is that we can actually provide like just such a phenomenally better experience. Like, that's what we strive to do, at least. And actually just shock people into thinking, wow, actually, I've never had an experience that positive with financial software. You know, that actually matters. While it might sound boring, it actually matters a lot to me and to Zip. And so that's something that, you know, that keeps me going.
Well, Rajul, I appreciate you coming on the show. If someone wanted to reach out, get in touch with either you or Zip, how can they do that?
Yeah, they can just go to ziphq.com or shoot me an email. I'm just Rajul, R-U-J-U-L @ziphq.com.
Thanks so much again for your time. Continued success to you and the team.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.